these guys survive the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and live to tell about it? It's Flagrant Howls.
Gentlemen, we got the full crew here, minus Jim Pete, of course, who we'll talk to this week. We got Kyle in a hotel downtown Minneapolis. We got the sports dad, Judd Zolgad. Are you guys still sort of high from that in-arena experience on Saturday?
I don't know if I'd say high. I'd say hungover. Okay. Yesterday was a big day for me, but it's the vibes. I am staying downtown. The vibes were great. I know the Twins played yesterday, or so kind they of. Said, kind of.
Yeah, you didn't miss much if you didn't go.
But it was cool to be downtown, like getting dinner or getting lunch with my parents and stuff, just going around, seeing people still wearing, you know, the same probably Timberwolves stuff they wore
48 hours later, just still wearing their old school Sprewell jerseys.
Yeah. I told Dane after the game, curious what you guys thought. I know we connected at the arena, but that was probably the bar is so low for me, but that was one of the coolest Minnesota sporting events I've ever been to. I mean, it was so loud, just the way kind of the passing of the torch, winning game one, resetting the series. For me, as a fan of Minnesota sports, that was a 10 out of 10 on Saturday night.
Judd, you love to rank stuff like this.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, noise-wise, it was – now, it's a completely different arena, stadium, whatever. But it reminded me of the Twins playoff runs, like with the amount of noise. And I think the jumping-off point, too, for saying that is you have to have, like, a star player, like a Puckett, right? Or in this case, like an ant, because Target Center, to the fans' credit, was alive the entire game. But didn't it feel like an ant's 19-point third quarter that the decibels like just shot up?
Yes, dude, I'm glad you brought this up, because Puckett's a great example of he was the it wasn't just a really good Twins team. It was a really good Twins team with a legendary front man.
Right.
It's like you go to a great concert and you can have a great time. And, you know, I like. We went and saw, I like Chris Stapleton. And so my wife and I went to Chris Stapleton, and he played his songs, and his songs are enjoyable, but he's not like a front man. He just kind of stands there for 2 hours and sings his songs. And there's been a lot of Minnesota sports teams like, yeah, it's a pretty good team right there. And the best player is Kevin Love, or there's a Vikings team. And, you know, like Teddy Bridgewater is the starting quarterback, but there's not, when you have a good team and you have a front man who is backpedaling his way down the court, thumping his chest with a look of sports rage in his eyes at his boyhood idol, by the way, Kevin Durant, saying, ha ha, this is my court. This is my league. Like, it just, I always talk about being the conductor of the arena, that's how you can tell. Like, Kobe Bryant steps in, Kevin Garnett with the powder, right? There's certain LeBron James. There's certain guys who can just walk into an arena and put 18,000 people on a string around their finger. And Anthony Edwards is one of those rare players in professional sports. And I think that's what helps heighten it for me anyways.
And to that Minnesota sports thing again, the alumni, I mean, half of the random Wolves of the Week that we've done, Phil, were in that suite, right? Troy Hudson was there. Cole Aldridge was there. A bunch of guys. And then you have
Randy Brewer was up in there.
Yeah. And then you have AP sitting courtside. You have Justin Jefferson. I mean, it was, you know, all of the favorite Minnesota sports athletes from either past or present were there. And they were all there to watch one player, really, right? Number five. So,
dude, I mean, AP like went to the locker room just to do a jersey swap and meet Anthony Edwards, right? I think I saw that.
Ant was thrilled too.
Yeah, just a giant dip in his mouth too the whole time.
AP, of course,
for 20 years. Yeah,
but he's never removed it. It was cool, and also to see Adrian Peterson, who like I grew up cheering for, but he's like what, one of the best athletes, and then to see him stand next to Ant. We always say Ant's built like a running back. He actually is. Like, he is bigger than AP. So that was really cool too, but just a 10 out of 10 night for me all around.
And the Ant Puck thing too is it's a little bit nuanced, because the thing with Ant and the thing with Puck is their opponents love them. Like Garnett created rage and it was awesome. Don't get me wrong. But when Ant
Francisco Elson was like chirping Kevin Garnett.
But when Ant is thumping his chest to Kevin bleeping Durant, and Durant's like just sort of laughing and like, but not like mad.
He flashes the three over to Beal too. Like, hey guy.
Yeah. It's this weird thing, because you've got this guy that wants to beat your ass, competitive as hell, but super respected and loved. And like that's the Puckett thing. Not a lot of guys have that, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just like, just kind of back to Kyle's initial take. Where does this rank in terms of Minnesota sports environments that you had a chance to be part of? it's very high. I mean, game 163 is definitely high up on that list. Any of the Brett Favre versus the Packers at Metrodome, Brett Favre going back to Lambeau. I'm trying to think of other teams. I wasn't at the Wolves Kings game 7 from 2004, where it's a, you know, playoffs are on the line, load up the clips, the Uzis, put the silencers, whatever. But that had to have been crazy for anyone in attendance. I mean, it's probably a top three Wolves game vibe. It's above game 82. It's above the play-in games. Because, dude, everyone went into the game, like fans, I'm sure even some people on the inside thinking, oh boy, this is a bad matchup. This team just absolutely smoked us 3 times in the regular season. So it was the low expectations and the nervousness flipped on its head with a 20-point lead in the second half, creating this party celebration. I think that played into it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're a Lakers fan, like listening to this pod, you're like, wait, game one of the first round series is one of the best sporting moments of your life? It's like, yeah, actually it was.
Yeah.
Because
kind of embarrassing, but here
but
we are.
We kind of hinted at this all week. That was kind of a must-win game, even though it was game one. Because if you lose that and now you are 0-4 and you've lost home court advantage, yeah, like they had to win that game. And then to do it decisively and kind of blow them out of the building. So I think it was an important game. It was a big sports moment. And then, as always with these playoffs, let's see how they respond in game two, because you do that again and the whole thing really shifts to the Suns are in major trouble.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. And because it's weird, if the Suns win on Tuesday, they're actually probably pretty pleased. Got a split, go yeah. home. Right. But if they lose on Tuesday, and especially if they don't have, and we talked about this, Phil, on our postgame show on Saturday, if the Suns don't have answers for what the Wolves just did, it could be curtains. Because, like, that's the key thing to me is, can the Suns respond to what you did? Because if they can't, if they just simply can't, then the Wolves have a magic formula that is basically going to put Phoenix on its heels in a massive way, even going home to game 3.
Well, that's like, so one of the things we talked about, Kyle, in our postgame show was, what is sustainable and what isn't when you start to look through? And my initial take, and I still believe this 2 days later, is I don't know that anything the Wolves did, just even in the box score, I don't know that, like, Anthony Edwards scoring 31 and 5 and 5, like, that's his playoff bar, man. Like, I saw a graphic on ESPN. He's now right behind Michael Jordan for most consecutive home playoff games, 35 and 5. He's a 35-5 guy in the postseason at age 22. That's pretty much who he has become, right? So I don't think what he did was amazing, and it definitely, like, brought the game to a new level, and it pretty much put the Suns' backups in after he was done with his run, but it wasn't anything that was completely out of the ordinary. So I would say, like, on the Suns' side, you could point to is the best percentage three-point shooter, Grayson Allen, going to go 0 for the series? No, he's probably not. Is Devin Booker going to have 4, 5, 6 games like he did? No, but there are very much Wolves reasons why those guys couldn't get their offense off. The fact that Chris Finch said, Jaden McDaniels, instead of putting you on Kevin Durant and assigning you an impossible task of holding him under 28 points, Durant's going to score 30. So, like, Kat, do your best, but he's going to score 30 like he always does for 15 years. Let's make it hard on Booker by putting the best defender on Booker and watch him go around for 40 minutes and try and get his shot off. Like, I thought everything they did was pretty sustainable.
I would imagine, I was telling this to Dane, like, Frank Vogel's probably telling them, hey, they can't defend like that again. Like, that's going to, you know, that's probably our big thing is, like, that was a grade A game from them. They'll never defend like that again moving forward. And Finch is probably like, hey, that's how we defended all year. So let's just keep doing that. You know what I mean? So that'll be kind of interesting to see game two. Is it officiated the same? Because if it is, kind of, you know, they let them play a little bit, obviously that benefits the Wolves. But yeah, I'm going to be interested to see, like, Grayson Allen, you said, is he even going to play? Like, he had that ankle. Do they go small and try to just play KD at the five? They don't have a lot of guys. Like, you look at who they played even in game one, they only have like 7-man rotation.
Bull Bull, let's rock it. 20 minutes of Bull Bull.
I would imagine him or like Thad Young get a chance because they can't really do too much with Nurkic. Eubanks is probably not going to play again. So I don't know. The Suns definitely will have adjustments. That's what the playoffs are all about. But you kind of look back, I'm curious for both of you, because this was a big contentious point between Dane and I. I didn't think Nas played well. Like, he missed a couple wide open threes. So it's like, mm-hmm. if you're the Wolves, like, there's some meat on the bone there. Mike Conley had maybe his worst game in a Wolves uniform.
It's like there was another Suns game where he also, wasn't he like 0 for 9 from 3 in the first Suns game?
He was pressing a little bit. Grayson Allen got under his skin. But I mean, Mike Conley makes half of those shots he missed. That's a different ball game. Jaden only had 9. You know, maybe he turns things around a little bit. And then Carl, I told Dane that I thought Carl, Anthony Towns, who we've talked about on this pod maybe once or twice, had an A-level game. Because to me, he didn't get in the way. He just kind of, you know, he established the run early on. He had that first double team over his shoulder to Rudy, had another pass to Ant cutting down the middle. He just kind of did what they needed and got out of the way. Dane thought he had a C+. So I don't know what you guys thought. Maybe you can give me the real grade. But he didn't get in the way. We talked about integrating him the whole time. And he just, you know, let Ant do his thing, let Na do his thing, and just kind of stayed in the shadows.
Some guys like Ant can be turned loose. Like Ant is going to, the spotlight goes on and that guy's like, oh yeah, let's go. And there's never a doubt. He can get off to a bad start. He does not care. I thought the guy that had I agree with you. Carl had an A level game, but I thought the guy who really should get the grade there is Chris Finch. Yep. I thought the use of Carl on Saturday was brilliant. It's exactly what I've been begging for, which is you turn him loose. You don't know what you're going to get. You could get a great game from Carl, but you also could get pouty Carl. Things don't go well. And it's my contention that when Carl Anthony Towns gets off to the type of start that Ant did in game one, he's sort of lost. Like Ant's third quarter was an FU to the world. Hey, I'm not having a good game. Now I am. Yeah. Carl's the opposite. So I thought the way that Carl was, dare I say, managed on Saturday was absolutely brilliant. And Chris Finch did a lot of smart things. And this is what we were all waiting a week for. What are you going to do? And I thought the Carl thing was absolutely brilliant. And I think that's the role that Carl needs to play, because it basically takes out if Carl melts down, either playing wise or mentally, we're in trouble. And it puts Carl in an ideal position. Dare I say, much like Kevin O'Connell used Cousins. He puts him in a position to succeed, and he almost removes the element of we're turning you loose and instead says, here's what we want from you.
What's funny is that's kind of the inverse, because Kirk Cousins' biggest problem in some of the high leverage moments or the big games is he gets a little conservative. He starts just getting a little bit. He doesn't want to ruin the game, or if they take a lead, right? It's very well, like, it's well documented that he doesn't want to be the thing and the reason why a game is thrown away, or doesn't want to throw 4 interceptions. And sometimes Carl's the opposite, where KOC needed to get Kirk to be a little bit more of a risk taker. And Finch is trying to get Kat to be a little bit less stray voltage. And to Kyle's point about the A grade, I agree, dude. Like, he's not expected to be the Jokic or the Embiid that lifts everyone else up in this series. Now, we could debate the macro of that, where if you go back 5 years and you got three ships, Jokic, Embiid, and Carl, which ship is going to be the furthest out in 2024? You would have said, man, Carl might be the most talented. So I think, like, there's a macro disappointment there that we're talking about. How can Carl fit into a series against the Suns? Whereas with the Joker, for instance, you're talking about how can the Lakers even try to stop this guy for 40 minutes? But based on where Carl is and based on where this team is, I love it, man. Like, they started off and said, hey, we're going to post you up, and you're going to, for the first two post-ups, double team comes in. He immediately makes the right pass. The first one resulted in a boom, boom, tic-tac-toe, wide open three in the corner. It was a miss, but it was the right process. And then the second one was a behind the back, like over the shoulder pass to Gobert for a dunk. And then later on, okay, the double team isn't coming. I can take Kevin Durant, gets to the free throw line. So, like, there was a little stray voltage, but not a lot. I'd still like to see some more three-point attempts taken by him. I thought he did okay on defense. Like, he had a hand in Durant's face on a regular basis, and Durant's just in God mode all the time. So, dude, it's like an A- for me too, Kai. I think I'm with you on the Cat evaluation.
And they're going to need him to maybe have 30 in a game in this series or moving forward. But, yeah, on Judd's quarterback kind of analogy, I think the Suns just were like, here's a check down, Carl, every play, and Carl just took the check down. He never really tried to, you know, do anything too crazy, and that was, again, that's why I thought he played really well. The fourth foul that he picked up kind of forced him to the bench, but You know, they have a lot of depth. I thought the offensive foul that they called on him, because, you know, we don't want him to have those crazy drives and stuff. He didn't do that, but he had one offensive foul against Kevin Durant. That was really
kind of weak.
But yeah, he played really well. And then obviously the podium game was for Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who probably, you know, team best plus 28. And that's just who he is, right? Like, if you don't watch the Wolves, you're like, who is this guy? Wow, what a great game for him. That's just who Nikhil's been all season. He played all 82 games. So he's kind of the lifeblood of this bench. And I'm sure he's going to play as many minutes, if not more, as the series goes on.
The Nikhil thing is interesting because that's if you're the Suns, I'm sure there's a bunch of Suns troll fans watching these podcasts, listening to these Wolves podcasts, listen to these idiots talking about their team after one game. They would point and say, Nikhil Alexander-Walker plus 28. What was it? 18 points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good luck getting that off the bench. Maybe not exactly that every game, but what was our conversation across all of Wolves media and podcasts and everything for a week leading in? It was the ingredient that you probably want to increase in this recipe for this series is Nikhil Alexander-Walker.
Yep.
And look what happened when they increased the serving of the ingredient. The guy goes off and he's a 6'5". The fact that he was a throw-in in that D'Angelo Russell, another classic game one dud for him, by the way.
Shocking.
A lot of memes across the internet. Like, Nikhil was a throw-in in the Mike Conley trade. And he's going to wind up being a valuable asset for like five more years for this franchise.
The stat that I saw that impressed me from the Wolves' end, and obviously was not impressive from the Suns' end. And I guess it's my question too, when you get beyond the Suns starting five, is this. Na had 18 points. The Suns' entire bench had 18 points.
Yep.
And so, like, you look at that and look, you know, it's one game, but here's the thing. We spent the entire week last week fretting about Chris Finch and the fact that the Suns had decisively beaten the Wolves three times. What were they going to do? Could they come back from that? Blah, blah, blah. So I think it'd be patently unfair to now say, well, yeah, but I mean, are they going to do this in game two? They were forced to, and they did it, and they did a great job of unveiling a formula that we hadn't seen. And like, if you're a Wolves fan, that's got to make you really, really pleased, because yes, Ant was great and his third quarter was off the charts fun. But the reality is the Wolves also made adjustments. And I wouldn't say that game was four quarters of aesthetically pleasing basketball, but that's how it's going to be won. Like, that's the playoffs in sports. They're not supposed to be pretty. They're supposed to be grinded out. What can you do? Who with athletic ability can muck things up? Can you be physical? I mean, the Wolves did a lot of things that it feels like through the years have probably been done to them, but they were the aggressors this time, and that's a positive.
Yeah, I don't know how Frank Vogel and the Suns adjust. I mean, they'll do some things. Like I said, maybe they go small. Although every time they went small with KD at the five, Finch, to Judd's point, would then adjust and put him in zone a little bit.
The last 2 minutes of the first half, that was like, oh, he was waiting for the perfect moment to go with the small lineup of death. Now we're going to play Rudy off the court. And there was like three turnovers in those last 2 minutes and a breakaway dunk.
Yeah. I thought the two stats of the game for me was one, the judge just said about bench points, versus just the whole Suns bench. And then the whole bugaboo for this team since Ant got here, since this new regime, has been getting out rebounded. That's what lost them the Grizzlies series, a series they should have won, 52-28 rebounding advantage for Minnesota. So it's like, if the Suns even go smaller, how is that, you know, if you get twice as many rebounds almost, that means you limit their second shot attempts in general. And then it's like, okay, let Kevin Durant cook in the mid range. But if we're going to take more shots than you, Rudy had six offensive rebounds. The Suns had three as a team. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if going small is the answer. It's not like this is smoke and mirrors either. This is just a team that fights around screens. Nikhil does it better than anyone. Jaden was great defensively. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know how you adjust to just really physical, great defense, especially when the officials are kind of letting them play a little bit more.
Yeah. And Gobert, it's not like Utah where it's Gobert and a bunch of sieves on the perimeter. It's Gobert and some of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA on this team. And man, like, in terms of Gobert's versatility, being able to get out in the perimeter, there's two highlights that stood out to me on defense. One, Booker had the ball in the corner at one point and Gobert got switched onto Booker, and the crowd, like, this is how smart Timberwolves fans are, smart, man. Like, the people in that arena, they know what to cheer for, when to cheer for it. There's like 14 seconds left on the shot clock and the fans see that, oh, the Suns just switched Gobert onto Booker. Let's get loud. This is going to be fun, right? And Gobert clamped him for, I think he clamped him for like 12 seconds, and then Booker finally got to the rim and whatever. But the other one was, it was maybe the highlight of the whole night for Anthony Edwards. Gobert on Kevin Durant in isolation at the top of the key. Gobert gets the poke in the one-on-one matchup, and then Anthony Edwards scoops it up and throws down the hammer dunk. To like, the fact that Gobert is out there, Booker, Durant on the perimeter, it's just, man, like, the narrative that he can't stay on the court during the playoffs is, it looks like it's going to get blown sky high with this particular cast around him.
Yeah, I thought the cool thing about that, and then just Durant in general, he was 11 for 17 from the field, which is like really good, but only three of those 17 shots came within 10 feet. So like, he's not going to blow by you anymore. That's not that Durant. He's still awesome. He's a legend in the mid-range, but I would imagine Finch and his staff are just like, we'll death by 1,000 mid-rangers. Like, we'll let you do that. And if we limit our turnovers and if we limit offensive rebounds, you just won't have enough shot attempts to make the math work. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in game two.
What do you guys think is going to be Vogel's counterpunch with Booker? Like what is the, like, Booker and Beal strike me as the two guys that they're going to try to counter with a little bit as far as adjustments go. But what is that, do you think?
Well, I think first and foremost, and again, like, Dane Moore NBA podcast for deeper X's and O's than I could ever provide you on Flagenhals, but there's a lot of other places too. I think if Booker's going to go off for 35 or 40 points, I don't think it's going to be with Jaden McDaniels covering him like a helicopter. Mm-hmm. So they have to find ways to create switches so that Booker has other defenders that are on him. That's my first takeaway, is like, if he's going to drop 38 points or 40 points, probably not with Jaden McDaniels as the primary defender on all of those 38 points.
Yeah, and I think Carl has had his best defensive season, but he still probably is maybe the weak link in the starting five, because the starting five has all NBA defensive players like Rudy and Jaden. But if they go smaller, maybe, and the Wolves don't play zone, maybe they put Carl in a lot of pick and rolls that, you know, whoever's Carl's guarding, just have that guy come set a screen, so then Booker gets switched on to Carl, and then he can kind of cook a little more, because, yeah, he can't do anything against Jaden. And then he's shooting, he came into game one shooting like 1 for 23 against Na. So it's like, he doesn't want to get switched on to Na either. So probably look to attack Carl a little more. But I mean, you're not going to hold Devin Booker down. He's as good as
he'll
gets.
Figure it out. Yeah.
But I think you can shut off Bradley Beal's water for most of the series. And that would be a big one too. And then you just, again, you go down the roster. Royce O'Neal's of the world kind of just have to beat you. He had a lot of open threes and he just didn't hit him. But that's another thing. The Wolves are probably like, yeah, we'll just give you that. And if that's how we lose this series, that's how we lose. But yeah, you can't let Booker get 40. Because if you know Durant just is penciled in for 30, then it starts to kind of add up. But Jaden and Nikhil and Ant, you just kind of switch them time after time on Devin Booker and get him frustrated. I thought he was going to get teed up in game one. So just keep doing more of that. And that should hopefully slow him down, but you can't really stop him.
Judd, Kyle and I are going to keep this podcast rocking here, but you have to go and record with Patrick Royce. So this is the last time we're going to hear from the sports dad, the post game pod Tuesday.
I got the towel.
Oh, are we waving the towel?
Wolves back. Wolves back.
We're waving the towel.
Wolves
folks.
Back. First time in a long time. Yep. Wolves back. Actually could win a playoff series. Yeah, that place is. I just want to say I am very, very pleased for a fan base that has stuck by this team for a long time. And I think they're damn good. I just think they're a good team. I don't think that this is a fluke. I don't think that anything going on with Glenn Taylor, A-Rod, and Laurie affects things one bit. I think that this team as a team is just really, really good. And I think it's going to be a fun run.
Yeah. There he is, the sports dad.
See you guys.
Judd Zolgad.
Bye, everybody.
All right. You can find him, Purple Daily, Judd's Hockey Show, Royce Unchained. As well, Kyle, I got a couple other questions for you for sure. Mostly like vibes questions as we do the rest of this episode. But I think I saw that Autograph jumped on board with Dane Moore, and also here on Flagrant Halls. They are looking for you Timberwolves fans because they have a really cool experience with the Autograph app. Autograph is where real fans get unreal rewards by bringing the best content for your team into one place. Autograph is the first app that could recognize and reward fans, turning their passion into access and experiences. Get all your sports content in one place. Read articles from your favorite teams, blogs, and publishers directly in the Autograph app. You can get ranked and level up, refer your squad, and get rewarded together. There's all sorts of incentives to download the Autograph app. And here for the audience, too, on the YouTube channel, there's a QR code that you can just scan and download the free Autograph app. Use the code word SKOR, S-K-O-R, to access the newly launched Timberwolves community and start getting rewarded for all the things you already do as a Wolves fan, like reading news, listening to and watching sports coverage, and attending events. It's that simple. Just download the free Autograph app and use the code word SKOR inside the app to get access to the Timberwolves community.
I think that's pretty sweet, by the way. Like, I was on a call with Dane and, like, I think the CEO of Autograph, like, what they're trying to do and build is really, really cool. And from a fan perspective, if this kind of takes off, highly, highly recommend using that QR code or looking at the screen for what Phil just posted, because that, I think Autograph could kind of be the future of some of this stuff.
Yeah. So check them out. Some celebratory news here. Number one, Flagrant Howls is higher on the Apple charts than it's ever been before. I think 24th.
Coming.
Well, top 25 basketball podcast. Dane Moore, and you guys are doing all sorts of podcasts together during the playoff run, is up to 16th right now. It was in the top 10 after the A-Rod Laurie.
Yeah.
It's making its way back up right now.
We need them back on. We need a bump.
Yeah. But, man, like, just back to the vibes for a second. Just even walking around the Twin Cities the last 48 hours and in the time after the game, I don't know how the rest of this series is going to play out. I think game one is a great sign for the Wolves. It doesn't mean you're going to sweep, but it kind of feels like game one to me outweighs the three regular season games. Cause like, oh, the Wolves made an adjustment here and they're fully engaged. They're healthy, everything. But fans are just ready for this. It's been so long. The last playoff series win was 20 years ago. It feels like with the fans and with the roster and Chris Finch and adjustments and Anthony Edwards, this feels like the beginning of something really, really cool. If not this year, maybe at some point in the next 3 to 5 years. They're building something very sustainable here, it feels like to me.
Saturday was a long day, but yeah, coming out after all the post-game stuff and it was still light outside, that was a win. Big fan of 2:30 games, by the way. But then like I met up with you, went around the city. I mean, this is just because I'm in town now, but like I was at Hope Breakfast Bar yesterday. I was at Cove and Wyzetta. I was at Bunny's. I just kind of made the rounds. But everywhere you went, it was a Sunday. People had Timberwolves gear on, right? And they weren't playing on Sunday. But I just think there's an excitement in this city. And it probably helps that some of the other teams are kind of having a down point or whatever. But Dane's kind of always said this too. It's cool to be a Timberwolves fan again. You don't have to hide out in your basement or whatever, or be scared to talk about it with your friends. You and I were hanging out on Friday at Dane's event, and there was just hundreds of people at that brewery that just wanted to talk basketball. And then on Saturday, I know 1,000 people were there. So it's a basketball city. I think it always has been. You know, doesn't mean it's not a hockey state as well, but I think there's a lot of smart fans, a lot of passionate basketball fans, and they finally have a real product that not only is a good now, but could probably be good for a while. So I'm just happy for the fans. I mean, really, there wasn't an open seat in that building on Saturday night. I mean, they even opened up the tarps and stuff. So I would imagine it's only going to get louder and crazier for game two. But as much as game one was a 10 out of 10 and I had fun and stuff, you know, it's not going to be remembered if you kind of just let go of that energy coming into game two and the rest of the series. So still a lot of pressure. This series is going to go, you know, I would imagine it goes a little longer than an optimistic fan would think, but you just got to keep kind of punching and punching and turning this into a boxing match and just kind of strangle the life out of them a little bit, because it's going to be hard to look uphill and be like, okay, we're down 0-2. Yeah, we're going home and we're the Suns, but that's the best defense in the league. Like, this isn't just a team. This is kind of the team in the West when it comes to defense. And that's just going to make it really hard on a team that doesn't have the depth and has been as bipolar at times as sometimes the Wolves have been in the past. So adjustments coming on Tuesday. Frank Vogel's a really good coach. Booker's really good. But round one, in terms of the shooting guard battle, definitely went to Ant. And if he keeps winning those rounds and is the best player in the series, I don't think anything else matters.
I just want to say something about Durant for a second. It's probably the sixth or seventh time I've seen him in person in his career, going back to like Oklahoma City and Brooklyn when they would come to town. It is incredible, man. Like, you can't block his shot. You can put seven. You can put 7 foot Karl Anthony Towns. You can put Gobert. You can put a Jaden McDaniels, and he just 18 feet, 20 feet, doesn't matter. He just rises up, little fade. How many times did the Wolves perfectly contest a mid-range or a long jumper from him with a seven-footer or somebody else lanky? And he just silky smooth, man, just like just enough tilt on that fadeaway, always shoots it at the peak so you can't block it. It's literally like shoot-around practice for him in the middle of the playoffs. It's never, just, I don't know. I don't have a take other than just like, I'm mesmerized by watching him play basketball.
Here, I'll help you. Kevin Durant's awesome. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is, the Wolves have now played the Grizzlies in that one series, and you probably came away like kind of hating the Grizzlies or whatever. They lose the Nuggets without all their guys, and you're like, oh, you know, the Nuggets are good. Maybe there's a respect there. I'm going to come out of this series regardless of who wins. Just, I mean, I just love watching Kevin Durant play, and he never gets rattled. You know, that moment in the third where Ant is kind of yelling at him, I thought was one of the coolest sports moments for me because it seemed like a passing of the torch. But that moment's not as cool if Kevin Durant doesn't like play along and just kind of smile, you know, like he had a smile on his face. Durant knows, because Ant's been very vocal about it. Like, that kid, I'm his favorite player. Mm-hmm. And to just have that exchange, that's like goosebumpy pure basketball stuff right there. So he's incredible. Even in the first quarter when he was cooking, I think he had like 9 of the first 11 points or something. I thought Carl had good contests. I thought, you know, when Jaden would get out on him, he had good contests. It's just, you can't really stop him. And Ant said that to me postgame. He was like, you know, there's no such thing as like shutting down Durant. It's just, can you kind of slow him down? And that's going to be their strategy. Can we slow him down? He's not going to get to the rim much. You know, if we keep our hands in our pockets and we don't foul him, just make him get long twos, contested twos, make him work for it. And that's kind of probably the strategy. You're not going to shut down their big three, but can you turn off the water a little bit on one guy? Can you frustrate another guy and then just let one guy cook? That's a good formula. You don't want to wake up Wednesday morning and Beal, Booker, and Durant combined for 90, because then you probably lost. Yeah. So, again, credit to Mike Anori, who said this week that they were pretty vanilla in game 82.
They caught us on the beach without our sunscreen, I believe, is the way.
Just give that man, Mike him up. Like, I don't know if you saw Mike Conley was mic'd up and it was kind of cute, but mic up Mike Anori because he is just brilliant. So
are we going to lose him now? Is he going to get hired after this? How many openings are we going to be?
I haven't, you know, there's been a couple coaching jobs open up and I haven't seen them listed, but I, you know, behind the scenes too, I think Krasinski had this that like Matt Lloyd, who works in the front office, was, I think the Hornets are trying to poach him or whatever. And the Wolves just came in and were like, we're going to keep you. And I don't probably give him a raise or something. So
that's why I love Glenn Taylor as an owner. He's just always willing to step up, whatever it takes.
I've got nothing for you. No, and you know, all the owners were in town, and I would imagine
the uncomfortable tension. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but
nope. I know
Glenn's sitting over there with his little sweater, and right across the defiance of Mark and Alex just sitting there.
I think I saw Glenn maybe try to hug them at one point behind the scenes. You know, because behind this tunnel or whatever, you go back to the media room. That's where the new owner's suite is and stuff. I don't know, man. They got to get that figured out. I would imagine it will get figured out, but
we've got some checkpoints. We got mediation coming up in like a week, and then we'll see what happens.
But it was cool to see, again, whatever, I'm biased, but it was cool to see people that I think had a good impact on the changing culture and the changing roster and this thing finally getting out of the decades of futility, able to be there and cheer this thing on. So and again, it wasn't really a distraction, right? Because they were all sitting there. I know they'd been there for a couple of regular season games, but it was all about the product on the floor. And with guys like Alex Rodriguez or Adrian Peterson or Justin Jefferson or Troy Hudson in the building, they were all legends. Focused on one guy, Anthony Edwards, and that was pretty cool.
Legends. By the way, Troy Hudson, one of the most legendary, I think it was a third quarter outburst against the Lakers in 2002, six-game series. So, yeah, he knows what it looks like to take over a game and get the arena bump. And that might have been in L.A. I'm trying to remember the massive quarter from Troy Hudson. But
one day we'll do top 10 underrated Timberwolves players of all time, and I might just be still hungover, but Troy Hudson would be like on my list. I just liked watching him play.
Did you buy his rap album back in the day?
No, I didn't get that, but I will go look.
Shut him down.
Is that on Spotify? That'll be my workout for the day. Just listen.
It's somewhere on the internet. Just Google or YouTube. I'm guessing Troy Hudson, Shut Him Down. I think that was the title track.
I can do that. Yeah. I was, you know, going back to just the arena one more time. all I could think about is there's really no way for this, because I was sitting up in like 110 where my seats were. So kind of looking up at the rafter and stuff, I was like, there's really no way this thing can get any better. And then I just thought back to when you and I would talk, and it's like, imagine like in a second round series, or God forbid, if they could make the finals, if they do all that pregame stuff and AP signing a football and, you know, asking for $150 and Justin Jefferson signing one, and all this cool stuff's happening. And then just like, it gets dark. And then like Kevin Garnett just kind of walks through that tunnel.
Dude, I said the same thing to Judd. I literally elbowed Judd as the lights kind of came down and they were doing the pregame, all that stuff, right? I elbowed him. I'm like, dude, what if he walks? It's not going to be for game one probably, but the roof would blow off that place.
I know you're not supposed to cheer in like the media row, which, okay, whatever, I respect that. But like, I've never seen anything about crying. Like, if that happens, I'm just full on tears, getting a beer from someone in the suite behind me. So yeah, I don't think Saturday in its whole thing could have gone any better. But the pre-game stuff that the Wolves games off people do like was really good. And just post-game, everyone was in the city just enjoying it. And then Sunday was one big mimosa festival. So I hope they can continue that energy into game two. Because again, I'm not trying to put the cart in front of the horse here, but if they can win on a series, doesn't start, right, Phil, until the home team loses. But if you have home court and you have game seven and you're up 2-0, and you have this defense that has traveled, the Suns have the stars to figure it out, but they're gonna have to thread a needle. So as good as game one was, they need to have that same level of intensity for all 48. And there's a lot of things the Wolves can adjust and do better as well. Yeah. So game two should be probably one of the better games in what has been kind of a tough NBA playoffs so far. But
yes,
game two should be awesome.
That's one thing as we wrap here that the Suns probably have to bank on, is that the energy and the effort and the Chris Finch used this word in his postgame press conference, the desperation Wolves played with, that it's probably going to come down a touch in game two. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it couldn't, because you're trying to prove to yourself in game one that the three regular season blowouts were a fluke. So the Wolves, it felt, the energy that they played with felt like game seven season on the line desperation.
Yep.
I don't know that they can replicate that every single playoff game, even with an extra day's rest, because you get the 2 days off. But then again, like, the Suns have to hit a certain level of desperation to even be in the game that you saw on Saturday. So one other note here, too. I know you were bouncing around. It is so much fun to just talk with listeners of these podcasts. So do not be shy. If you see Kyle walking around, if you see me walking around, like, we want to talk basketball with you. Don't be shy. It's a blast when listeners of Flagrant Howls or Purple Daily or Dane Morris podcast, whatever, come on up. Like, don't be shy. Come on up. Let's talk some basketball.
Absolutely. Like, I know people are like, well, you know, there's a lot of media people, by the way, that are, this is their job. And when they're at the games, they're covering the games. Krasinski, Chris, Jace, Dane. I'm not one of those people. I am just there with a laptop watching the game. But no, there were so many people that have come up to me. Even yesterday was a good day for me. We celebrated my mom's birthday because she's in town and she loves to do two things. That's just drink beer and play pull tabs. So we were at Bunny's and we hit two $888 pulls.
What?
So she was elated about
Let's
that.
Go, dude.
And then we just lost our mind. And then we started buying some drinks for people that were also Wolves fans that had, you know, so just, I've never been around, and I know I don't live here right now, but I've never been around this much excitement about this team, because even when they had Jimmy Butler and they did that Rockets, you know, little playoff series, or the Grizzlies one that had Ant, I think there was still real fear of, I don't know, this doesn't seem sustainable. Whether or not they can pull this out, and I hope they do, and I think they will, this series, but I think fans are starting to come to, like, hey, we might be doing this every spring, you know, like, we might not be booking anything for late April or early May for, like, spring break or vacations, because this team's probably going to be playing some really cool playoff games. So I'm just really, man, I'm happy for them, and it was awesome to see the love that you and I and Judd and everyone else got this weekend. So, yeah, if you see us on Tuesday, come say hi.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. All right. He's Kyle. He's in a hotel room downtown Minneapolis right now, getting ready for game two. And it's just a huge week for Score North here too, for Minnesota sports. Cause we got the Purple Daily draft party on Thursday night at the Fillmore. So, yeah, just thank you guys for supporting Flagrant Howls. Thank you for supporting Score North and everything we do here. For Kyle, I'm Phil. For the sports dad, Judd Zolgad, this is a Timberwolves lifestyle podcast.